CliffCentral.com.
All right. You made it through the long weekend. Well done. Congratulations. Everybody gets a medal, a participation trophy. Very, very good. Mash is in the studio, as is Ryan. They are ready to go this morning. It is Wednesday, the 22nd of March. Congratulations and well done, everybody. Mash thinks I'm still on holiday because I'm wearing a like tropical shirt or something. I don't know.
That's a holiday shirt, Gareth. Yes. Definitely holiday mode activated.
Well, take it. Nothing wrong with a holiday shirt. All right, so was the national shutdown just like, was it a letdown or a shutdown?
Complete flop.
We knew it wasn't going to happen. Did we not say it's not going to happen?
I want to give full credit to Pumi. Pumelele said on Thursday, she was like, this thing is going to be dead. Yeah. Dead in the water, and it's not going to amount to anything, and it's going to be a damp squib, and that's exactly what happened. I mean, what a disappointment. If that was my protest, I'd be embarrassed. Wouldn't you?
Absolutely.
Well, when I saw Julius Malema holding hands with Carl Niehaus, I was like, okay, this is over.
That is so bad, right? Oh, Jesus.
Because how many national shutdowns have they threatened in the past? How many? You've had way too many.
And the one that they do follow through with is just pathetic. Did you see all those videos of all the people in like small town South Africa with like 10 protesters per town? It was just so sad. I saw one from the Eastern Cape. I saw a couple from the Free State. I saw a few in Gauteng. I mean, if this isn't like the worst possible outcome for the EFF, I don't know what is. I mean, it's like so bad, right?
Killed me was all the ANC, all the ANC members commenting on Twitter, basically saying, what a flop it was. And then everyone is commenting back at them like, no, a flop is having to get another party to actually do this to get your attention. And then you get scared about it.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, so Julius claimed that it was a total win, and he said a massive success, right? And, I don't know how he could see that, if he was blind, if he was deaf, if he was like not paying attention, maybe. But I mean, what a disaster.
Bona Gareth, in the land of the blind, the elections are coming up. Who the hell is talking about EFF right now? Even their little Twitter Nazi little group there, who are always supporting them, but never actually support them when it comes to the voting, to the actual polls. Where are they? Yes, national shutdown trended number one. EFF trended again. But we've come to learn that them trending means nothing.
Twitter is
not the real world.
Correct. So anybody, and this goes for corporate South Africa too, because there are a lot of people in businesses in South Africa who think that if you trend, that must mean that you're a big deal. Well, we've seen that means zero.
It means absolutely nothing. And the sooner EFF learns this, the better. They need to start actually putting in actual action and doing stuff that actually benefits communities or the communities of the people who vote for them. And just giving out food, striking, attacking cliques, attacking shops just because of something racially motivated is not going to get them votes. They'll get votes on Twitter, but not actual poll votes, unfortunately.
So what a waste. I mean, there were people who were genuinely frightened. You know, there were people who were like, oh, we better make sure we've got food. We better make sure we've got drink. We better make sure that we are safe in our houses. Like, we need the community policing forum. You know, I don't even know what to say. I mean, it's just so embarrassing, right?
People were nervous. And I remember because, obviously, you know, I went on a little, trip this past weekend, which we'll touch on later. But, on that Monday, my partner was telling me that my sister doesn't know if she should go to work because there's the threat of the strike and the protest. Yep. But she says that it's now 9 a.m. and of course managers at work, they haven't opened shop yet, but nothing's happening. So she's not too sure. She's not too sure if she should still go or not. What exactly is going on? She's not sure. She's actually nervous. And then end of the day, their shops, wherever her sister works, wasn't touched. And he was like, nothing happened in that whole area. That whole area experienced nothing. Well, she could have went to work.
Venetia says quite rightly, at least Julius and Carl became good friends, you know? Carl Niehaus and Julius. What a couple. Reject. I mean, if there's any couple from this that we can celebrate their love together, it's those two, right?
So what is Carl now a part of the EFF?
Oh, God.
Who cares? Who gives two shits? I mean, really, like when Carl Niehaus posted on, was it Monday morning early? Because I woke up so early. I have no idea why, but I was up super early on Monday.
Table.
And Carl Niehaus had this picture of him like, yeah, a luta continua. The struggle continues. Him and like two of his black friends in the car together going to the march. I was like, this is the saddest thing I've ever seen. Is this sad, lonely, and lame, or fucking what? I mean, really.
I think my favorite part was, I think it was the day before or like the Friday when Becky Taylor got all the police troops out in the field to address them. And they made this whole, like, they put music behind it and he was addressing them like it was some national massive thing for your country and the people must be protected. And it's like, thanks for showing us we actually have the resources that you never use, you know?
Yeah. Thank you. And then what happened in Chandra Lax's house as well?
Well, apparently that already happened on, what was it, Monday morning early? Yes. And we spoke about it briefly on the show, but it sounds like, I mean, there was some kind of firebombing of his house or who knows, but does he hate the EFF? Wow. He has no time for them. Yeah.
So now I see here on Twitter, they say that he actually vandalized his own house and lied that his
entire family
has been killed just to seek attention.
Is that true, though?
Twitter is pushing this. They're literally saying he's a disgrace to Africans. They are trashing him. They were trashing him the whole of yesterday.
I'm going to wait till I've seen an official, you know, thing about that before I...
Yeah, it could be fake news.
Could be fake news.
It could be. It is on Twitter, so just...
Also, I had power the whole weekend. I didn't know what to do with myself. It was so weird.
It was amazing, was it not? It was the best thing ever. And I actually forgot how it feels to just be able to be like, turn on the washing machine. It says 3 hours and I can just relax. I can just let it run.
Or that the microwave keeps its time.
That is amazing. The oven kept its time. Oh, we're living the laugh. We are VIPs. This past weekend, we were just at it. Gareth.
CZ says the shutdown was not as successful as the EFF thought, but what we learned was suddenly we had enough police.
There we go.
And suddenly we had no load shedding for 2 days. So
exactly. It's possible.
Shows you what the government can do if you put a bit of pressure on them, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Ricky says, I feel so sorry for Carl Niehaus. The guy tries so hard to fit in. He's like an old gorilla that gets kicked out of the troop. Once he gets old and nobody wants him because he's weak.
Shame, man.
Love that.
Oh, man.
Says, Mash, you need to get off of shitter. And Signet says Mash is spreading fake news again. I don't know about that. I don't know. We'll see. Snai says it may not have been a success in numbers, but it did get the ANC shaking. All the military personnel, choppers and police. That's an indication that Julius is doing something right, better than the DA. How do you like that?
Well, I think after this weekend, I don't think they'll take him as seriously as before.
Yeah, they definitely won't.
I don't know if you saw, they actually used the fake, they used the pictures from 2017 on Twitter to try and show the numbers, but it was actually...
How sad is that, that they used like fake pictures from a previous march?
That's what they usually do on Twitter to actually cause outrage and stir up the crowd, stir up... The fake news brigade, because they just they hire Twitter influencers, give them old videos from old marches, old protests, old EFF events, people wearing the t-shirts, and they just make they make people think that, oh, this is today. This is today in Bombela. This is today in Kimberley. This is today in Soweto. Meanwhile, these are videos from 2019. That's what they do.
The really bad thing about this is, I mean, that's bad enough. But on Friday, I mean, my mom sent me a video. She's like, ooh, you better use a different route home. And so I sent a friend of mine who lives in Midrand because, you know, he was the one who would be most affected. Mm-hmm. And then he went on the internet and he checked it and it was fake news. Exactly. Like there was nothing. There were no burning tires on Allendale Road. It was nothing. There was zero going on. Mm-hmm. And so I phoned my mom. I'm like, hey, don't spread fake news. She said like, oh, I thought it was real.
Of course you thought it was real. Because unless it actually affects you immediately, unless you're driving through that area, you're not going to double check, Gareth. You're not going to double check. That's how the fake news spreads.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Unfortunately. Through our mothers.
Carl said, better than the DA? Are you on crack cocaine? The EFF have never built or created anything. All they do is divide and destroy. Biggest twats on the planet. Gray says, oh, please, there's nothing the EFF does better than the DA other than, unless you include taking checks from their sugar daddy, Mazzotti. Famous Mama says, it's always our mums. My mom was worried about me going to gym. Yeah, they always worried about that. Mm. But people do that, you know, I don't think people spread fake news because they're trying to, like, upset people for no good reason.
Yeah.
I think they really care. Yeah.
There's definitely no ill intention or malice attached to it. They really do care. But of course, they're not going to check it themselves.
Yeah. And then
sharing it.
And you end up sharing it. And so it goes viral. And, you know, it's a problem. Massive problem.
Especially those voice notes that go like, avoid William Nicol because, there's a threat. Hey, those voice notes.
Who are the people? Who do you think is the person who first shares it knowing it's not real? And what do you think their intention is? Because that I would love to understand.
Maybe they're sharing it giggling. They're like, let's see if people actually won't go to William Nicol. And then next thing you know, nobody's going to William Nicol as a result. Because it's just spread like wildfire.
Are you calling it William Nicol on purpose? Or is that like just are you messing around?
How am I supposed to say it? Am I?
William is fine. Yeah. It's not William Nicol. I mean,
I thought. I thought because I live in like where like you know Afrikaans started and supposed to. Oh, okay.
It's William. Well, William Nicol is fine.
We learn every day, I suppose.
Okay, so tell us about your vacation, Mash. Where did you go?
My vacation. So we didn't go too far out. We went to Hardee's. Am I saying that wrong? Is it Hardee's? Or am I supposed to say
that's Hardee's? Fine. Hardee's is fine. Go on.
Okay. So we went to Hardee's and we stayed at this beautiful golf estate. It was so much fun. So it was basically a couple's trip, multiple couples, four couples in total, including my couple relationship. So we went there and then as soon as we got there, it was just fun all around. But on the first night, we actually decided to play a game. It happened quite impromptu. So me and my partner actually have each other's passwords on our phones.
Uh-oh.
You know, we have each other's passwords and we have our faces.
There we go.
So iPhone's knowledge.
Is that clever? Is that right? Is that a good idea?
That is right. It is trust, Gareth. It's right. So, of course, we also have Find My On, so we can always keep tabs on each other and where we are. We have our faces on each other's iPhones. So, because iPhone now lets you set up two different, multiple faces to unlock your phone. I don't know if you guys know that.
That is so dangerous.
That's just trust. That's just trust. No.
I'm going to say right now that this is a very bad decision on both of your parts. Not that you should be hiding stuff from each other, but, you know, if you have someone's password for their phone. Like at some point, the relationship is going to go a little bit hard and difficult. And then you're going to start second guessing each other. You're going to start logging into each other's phones and look up old messages. I'm just thinking it's a very bad thing long term. I mean, anybody in the comments is welcome to argue with me, but I'm thinking it's bad.
Yeah, well, it's working out great for us. And so what happened was, of course, in the group, me and my partner use iPhones. Everybody else uses Android. So, of course, everybody wanted to use our phones for pictures. And as a result,
it's how it goes.
They kept asking to like, oh, please borrow me a phone over and over again. Yeah. So at some point, somebody comes to my partner and goes, hi, please unlock your phone. My partner goes like, no, ask Mesh to unlock it for you. And then cool, they give it to me. And now everybody gathers because they're like, wait a minute. Everyone here. So I have to also elaborate that everybody on this trip has been together for long. 7 years minimum. 7 years. Ooh. 17 years.
Wait, are they married?
Two couples are married. One is engaged to be married on literally end of April. Is their wedding day.
7 years and not married.
Yeah, so all these couples have been together for a long time. Married or not, they've been together for a long time. We're together just for a couple of months. So people are doubting that, Mesh won't know his partner's password. Of course, Mesh won't know, you know? And then my partner's like, oh, ask Mesh to unlock my phone for you. Cool. They give it to me. Not everybody gathers because they're like, these two have been together for like 2 minutes. Of course, Mesh doesn't know the damn pin. And then I just pa, phone unlocks. Everyone goes like, yay, congrats, yay. So now my partner is like, okay, well, let's see everyone else. Everyone, swap phones with your partners and unlock your partner's phone. We've been together for 2 months. Y'all have been together for quite a while. So we're expecting to see some positive results here. The first couple goes ahead, swaps phones, and they unlock each other's phone successfully. Second couple, the woman takes the husband's phone. And the second couple has been together for like 17 years, actually. They've been married for 17 years.
I just want to point out, like, you and your partner are making the rest of them look a little bit lame.
Basically, that's why they were even doubting us and stuff. Okay. So then the second couple goes ahead, wife unlocks her man's phone. Awesome. Husband tries to unlock his wife's phone, incorrect password. He's like, wait, give me a second. We're all gathered around him. Incorrect password. He's like, what's going on? And the wife is like, oh, you know, between you and the kids, you know, I can't, like, yeah, my phone's not my phone. You and the kids. And now everyone goes silent and looks at each other like, ooh, secrets. Oh, there's some secrets up in here. Last couple, time for them to swap phones as well. And the guy can't unlock his wife's phone. And the wife, I think the wife could unlock his phone. But yeah, that's when all the drama started. That's when this nice little couple's trip turned into a Tyler Perry movie because fights started. People were just going at it. And the couple that's engaged to be getting married as in next month were like calling it quits. And they were like yelling and screaming. Uh-oh. They're like, I'm done with you. And it's not the alcohol speaking. I'm done.
I mean, basically, you and your partner ruined everyone else's time by being trusting and, you know, like knowing each other's passwords and all that. You made the rest of them look stupid and embarrassed.
We absolutely did. And then, not intentionally, of course.
Is this genuinely like how a couple's trip goes? Like, do couples just like compete with each other? Is this a thing?
No, it's not. I have to say, it's not how couples trips goes. I think not looking back, there are certain elements that feel like competition. You know, there are certain elements. For example, one guy was like driving his cars, trying to drive faster than everyone. And he kept saying, you guys are slow. And we're like, huh? And then we went to, cable ride and go up to the top of that mountain. And one of the couples couldn't go. And one person was like, y'all don't have money. And it was just
that cable car is extraordinary, by the way, Gareth. I don't know if you've been on there.
Yeah.
And if you go there on your birthday, here's a Cliff Central top tip. If you go there on your birthday, it's free. Take your ID. It's free.
Absolutely. Okay. So birthday time, here we come. But yeah, overall, the trip was fun. Things got really awkward because literally two of the four couples were fighting like hardcore fighting. And there were tears. There were people saying, I'm done, the wedding's off, and yeah, it's a lack of communication in some relationships, and it is quite unfortunate. Unfortunately, they didn't even discuss the issue at hand. Next morning, they acted like everything was okay. Everything was fine, as if nothing ever happened. Meanwhile, that issue's still lingering. So let's see. Let's let them get married.
So, I mean, basically what we've learned from this is that if you are a couple that really trusts each other, do not tell the other people.
Yeah, basically.
Because they're going to get jealous. They're going to get unhappy with each other. There's going to be some shit going down. It's not good.
Always. So if things are going well, do not tell anyone. But the thing is, you don't realize when things are going well, because for you, it just feels normal. It just feels like another Tuesday, unfortunately. But yeah, we went to the dam. We saw that that infestation at the dam as well.
It's bad,
it is disgusting.
It's a real problem there with that. I think it's water hyacinth.
Yeah, hyacinth.
It's basically taken over like 3/4 of the dam, and they cannot kill it. Like, there's no way. There's nothing they can do, because if you chop it up, it just gets, it proliferates. It gets more and more.
It doubles and triples. And,
yeah, so they've got a massive problem. And that you think about all those people who bought like waterfront property who thought
Beaconwood.
Yeah, they thought this is a great investment. Man. We're going to have this property for our children and our grandchildren, and they're all going to get on the boats, and they're going to go and ski on the dam and all that stuff. Meanwhile, you can't get, if you got a boat anywhere near that, it would be a disaster.
Absolutely.
Also, one thing I've noticed when because I went there like 2 weeks ago, and one thing I found very irritating, and it never used to happen before, but the actual like the dam bridge where the water overflows, a lot of people are the dam wall. Sorry, a lot of people are pulling over there to take pictures and hang out on the sides where the cars are meant to drive. It was never a thing years ago, but now it's almost impossible to like get through. So weird.
Well, what do you mean?
Like, so that dam wall where everyone's taking pictures there now. Have you seen? Yep. They actually get out their cars and like are walking on the dam wall.
Yeah.
And that never used to be a thing years ago. You weren't allowed to stand there.
Oh,
and there's a little arch there as well.
Yeah.
Yes, that little arch. Yeah.
And so now some people are bypassing those robots because, you know, it's a one-way bridge. So you have to wait. And some people bypass it and then they just screw up the whole traffic system. Oh, it's a whole mess.
We parked on the side of the road for that.
Let me go to Kampamba here, because he says something that I think a lot of us feel. Like reading my journal, I'm sorry, but my phone is my phone, and the same with yours. I'll unlock my phone and you can check for stuff, but I won't give you the password. A phone is very private. Kind of with Kampamba here.
Sharing passwords is not about like keeping track of each other and checking your WhatsApp. It's just about, oh, I need to make a phone call quickly. I don't have airtime. Let me just use your phone. Or, I just need to take airdrop myself some of the pictures that I took earlier on your phone or that you took of me.
Listen, I appreciate it. I think it sounds very good. It sounds like you two have got each other's backs. I mean, it's really honest. It's all those things. No problem. But it's not everybody's cup of tea, and not a lot of people will trust.
That is true. That is absolutely true.
Nico says, I've been dating for 10 months and we know each other's passwords from about 5 months ago. Okay. Very good.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Congrats, Nico.
They're working on the hyacinth problem. So Carl says they're working on the hyacinth problem again. Rhodes University has brought in a bug that eats it. By June, it should be mostly gone.
I hope so.
Well, oh, lovely. I mean,
if that's true, that would be amazing. Another Mash says, why do people think it's such an achievement to know a partner's cell phone PIN? I've never understood this.
Yeah.
Well, I also don't understand it.
No, I do think, I mean, it is a big deal. Like, if someone has the PIN to your phone, that's not a small thing. I often at a house party or whatever, I'll give people my PIN so that they can play music off my phone or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that's cool, but I'm not hiding anything. I'm not in a relationship, so I think it's cool.
Absolutely.
And, you know, unless you've got like dodgy shit on your phone, you shouldn't really be worried. At the same time, give someone else your PIN. You're also giving them the PIN to your banking and all kinds of other things. I'm not so sure that's such a good idea.
Mm.
You know?
Yeah. I hope you've drawn that line, Mesh.
Oh, we have a joint account.
Oh my God.
Oh, really? Wow.
Don't you think it's a, don't you think that's a bit too early?
Yeah, like how long, everything how is long too early.
How long have you two been an item?
Like two months and something.
2 months and you have a joint account. Nah, man, wow. You're making me sound crazy.
Wow.
Ryan, have you ever been in a relationship?
No, but I know for after exactly. 2 months, I definitely wouldn't hand over a bank account.
What's your benchmark for this? Mm-hmm. If you've never been in a relationship, what's your benchmark?
Gareth, what do you think on this one?
It's too soon, but
no.
It's none of my business. I mean, you know, Mash does different stuff to what the rest of us would be comfortable with. Congo Chris says, bullshit, Mash. Wanting to know passwords is to check for cheating, and you know it.
No, it's agree? Not in this case. It's literally no? just to, oh, let me just airdrop my pictures. Let me just, oh, babe, call whoever on my phone. And I do that. It's that simple. It's not that deep. It is not that deep.
Mash Mashinini says, next we'll be sharing toothbrushes once the phone password is commonly shared.
Mm? No, you can't do that.
Mm-hmm. I've got matching keychains with our names and like infinity on them.
Yeah,
that was nice. That was nice as well. So yeah, we're having fun here in Love Lives Here. We definitely are. But speaking of Love Lives Here, I also want to actually share a bit of fun information, for people who are considering being parents soon, as a part of Love Lives Here.
Mash, please don't tell me you're considering this already.
Yeah, Ryan, no comment. but there is lots of tech nowadays that's actually making being a parent much easier. Technology has revolutionized parenting, and the pressures and stresses of parenting have been reduced slightly. I'm not saying it makes parenting easier. Parenting is not an easy task. It is difficult. You'd barely get any sleep, and your life revolves around these little selfish babies. So that's awesome. But, here's some interesting tech that I came across. So I was just on YouTube. I was just reading up some articles online, and I noticed that, damn, technology is really making parenting slightly easier. The first little piece of tech is one that you use for your little infant babies. So, your little newborn babies, they're still feeding, breastfeeding and stuff like that. So this system is called the Kubo baby monitoring system. And basically it hangs above your baby's crib, sort of like that thing that like dangles above the crib with like the little decorations.
A toy. What do they call those things?
I forgot what it's called. But you know exactly what I'm talking about from the description. Yeah. So right. It's basically a 1080p camera with night vision and two-way audio that hangs above their crib. It has a temperature sensor as well as AI that notifies you if your little one is crying or is not feeling well, based on the temperature and based on many other factors as well, including sound. It's always listening as well. And it has an app attached to it, of course, which is on your Wi-Fi, and it notifies you of this no matter where you are in the world. So even if you leave your child with the nanny puts them to bed in the crib.
Hold on, Mesh. We've got a call. Just hold on a second. Just want to put this on. Hang on. Oh, got to connect here. Wait a second. I'm going to just quickly connect the call, and then we're going to see who this is. All right? Hang on a second. Hello. Go ahead.
Hi. Good morning. Hi, Gareth. How are you?
What's happening?
Nothing much. Sorry, I'm just trying to mute the TV.
Amir, where are you calling us from?
Abu Dhabi.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, wow. So was there an EFF protest in Abu Dhabi over the weekend?
No unions at all. No rights, anything.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's pretty normal here. I've been in Abu Dhabi now in the Middle East world now for the past 12 years.
What do you do there? Wow.
I'm a teacher.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I've been listening to you guys now for over, I think, 6 years, and it's just my little shot of home every time I listen to the podcast.
Awesome, man. Thank you. We're thrilled you listen.
Yeah. I especially enjoy Thursdays with Pumi and Canton.
Very good.
Yep.
Do you do you care about Mash's story about the baby mobile and like the app that warns you your child is going to wake up or something? You don't care about that either, right?
Nothing at all. No. It's listening to Mash, it's like CR 2.0. It's like
sorry, Mash. All right, thanks so much, dude. Nice to hear from you.
Cool,
thank you. Bye-bye. Bye. Okay. Mash, I'm sorry, but nobody seems to really care about your story about the parenting apps. Sorry.
So
not going to happen.
Nobody just has babies or wants to have babies from this audience.
Nope.
Okay, let's move along.
This is quite interesting. Mash, apparently Ryan's gran, you know, who died a while ago, finally her estate is paid out. Did you get something, Ryan?
Ryan, lunch is on you.
I did get a little bit. I told my mom to keep most of it. I was like, don't worry about me. I'll be good.
Shane, but, so how long ago did your gran die?
So it was about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. It was probably like, I think it was 2020 or 2021. But it's taken 2 years to get this estate sorted out. It has been the biggest bore lake. Because my gran, I think a year before or 6 months before she died, she changed her will from the lawyer to the bank. Okay. And now I don't know if the bank just has like so many requests that can't keep up. But let me tell you, it was a pain in the ass to try and get this estate sorted. And we were on the phone. I think it eventually took an email to the CEO of this bank to get this thing sorted.
You're kidding.
No lie. It took, my uncle got so frustrated. He was eventually like, you know what? I'm going, he got the email of the CEO somehow. He found a way in, and the CEO was appalled and said, I'm sorry, I'll get on it right now. And only, I think it got paid out like 2 weeks ago. And it was September 2020 or 2021.
Ryan?
Yes.
How much did you get?
Oh no, I just took like
five zeros,
like $5,000, whatever. And then I told my mom to keep everything else. I don't need.
What is everything else?
Or my grand's bunny left over.
Okay.
And you know, she had a house, and then that was sold, and money is distributed to the family. No.
Are you looking at six zeros? Five zeros? Huh?
No, well, it was like everything that was in the estate. It was like the house, the car. It was all the money she had left over from her retirement. All of that.
How old was she when she died?
87.
Okay. Who got the car?
No, it was all sold.
Oh, it was all sold.
Yeah.
And then
all the money was split between the siblings.
Oh, between the siblings.
Yeah.
How much did you get? How much did your dad get?
No, my mom gets, mom. Yeah, and then her brothers got.
Okay.
So, but I was so frustrated. I was like, does it normally take 2 years to sort this out? Like, it takes so long.
Did she have a will?
Yeah, she had a will. Everything was in place. But my whole thing was, would it have taken a lot less time if it was with the lawyers and not the banks? You know?
I think so.
It probably would have. Conga Chris says, deceased estates always take are always a ball ache. They always take a long time. That is probably true. Vyasin and Aleko think you are avoiding the question on how much money was left.
I don't know how much money was left, to be honest.
It's none of his business. Like, he wasn't the direct beneficiary. So it was more between, you know, his mum and her brothers. So
yeah,
maybe Mash's significant other is getting access to his phone and joint bank accounts so that life insurance can be taken out without Mash's knowledge.
Life insurance is taken out with my knowledge. We already add each other on our life insurance policies.
That's true.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
What about that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at least, you know, things will be paid out quickly. They are the beneficiary.
Hey. Hi, Mash. You see what password sharing does. Now you want to know how much Ryan got.
But Ryan, you shared the story with us, so you have to give us numbers.
No, I don't have to give you numbers. I'm just saying it's frustrating. It took so long that, I mean, 2 years. Can you imagine, like, if somebody like really needed the money or anything like that?
No, dude, it's a disaster. I mean, like, also for like, if she had a partner who was left behind and that person depended on that money, like, let's say that the breadwinner dies and then you know, the other person is left and they don't have any income. I mean, you can't sit for 2 years waiting for that to come through. It's going to be a disaster, you know? Vyasin says his granddad only left him a big nose. That's all he's got.
Oh, Batum.
No, yeah. Man. Oh. No, so that's just, that's like the frustrating end of it. I'm just going to say, like, you know, if I were to die, I'd literally tell anyone who has access to my accounts to just go and withdraw everything I have if it doesn't take this long.
Absolutely.
You know?
But you know, and I actually was speaking to a friend of mine a couple of weeks ago, my friend who went blind. I did talk about this story before.
Yes,
he went blind for about a week and then he couldn't see.
But is his sight back now?
His sight's back, but it's not fully back. He actually qualifies to be, he's actually legally blind at the moment. He can see, but he can't see at the same time, if you get what I mean. So he's legally blind and he needs some eye contacts that cost like 20 grand. And in order to actually recover from his surgery properly. And he's telling me that I do not have this money. I don't know what the hell I'm going to do. And I keep saying, you're legally blind. Can't you just claim from your insurance, claim for temporary disability? Because most life insurance policies do actually pay out for temporary disability and they pay a small little portion, but it's more than enough to pay for the surgery that you need. He's like, why would I have life insurance? I was like, what? And this absolutely shocked me. I was gobsmacked. And then I asked around because I was telling my other friends, I was like, you know, whoever doesn't have life insurance, what the hell? And some of my friends were like, life insurance, do we need it? And this absolutely shocked me to the core. And I realized that people between your 21 and maybe 27, 28 don't have life insurance. So the ones that I know, I don't know, maybe you have to put up a poll out there and do a study, but it seems like most young people don't have life insurance. They just go out of varsity and just live life. And that absolutely shocked me.
I mean, if you don't have dependents, if you don't have people who, you know, need to benefit, you know, if you die, then life insurance is probably unnecessary. I know I'm going to make myself very unpopular with all the financial advisors. No, but I don't think you need life insurance if you don't have dependents.
Yeah.
Like it's just you. No, really, you don't, Mash. You don't need it.
My thing is, what happens if you die?
If you don't have like your boyfriend or whatever, where does the money go?
I don't want anyone benefiting from my death. Are you kidding? I'm like, no, hell no.
It's not benefiting.
Yes, they are.
Yes,
they're getting money from you being dead.
Yes, yes, yes. They are getting money from you being dead. But also, it also sets the tone. Keep in mind that let's say I have a house that I haven't finished paying off and I'm married and I don't have life insurance. Then what?
Okay, but if you're married, then you have dependents.
Yeah, that's
yes.
If you don't have dependents, don't worry about it. Carl says, you have no dependents, Mash. You're wasting money on life insurance, like buying petrol for a car that you don't have.
Mm-mm.
Good point.
Mm-mm. My dependents at the moment are my family because they're still alive. Obviously, once I have my own kids, once I'm married or whatever, then it'll change then. But we actually saw this with another family member's funeral a couple of years ago. And it was quite sad because it kind of leaves a sour taste in your mouth. Whereas this person didn't have life insurance. They didn't even have funeral cover and they pass away. And now you're left with this debt. You're left with having to pay for a funeral that nobody budgeted for. The whole family had to chip in. Everyone had to chip in for this funeral. And it kind of leaves a bad taste. Not, I wouldn't say a bad taste. Let's say a sour taste in your mouth because your last memory of this person would be, why didn't you just pay $100 a month to make sure that you're sorted? Should you die? Why didn't you? Because now this is what you've left us with. This is your legacy to us now. It is sad, but it's a reality.
Again, if you have dependents, cool, and you need life insurance. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's a waste of time. Cunning Stunt says, I was a financial advisor. A married couple came in and took each other as beneficiaries. The husband came back the day after to change his beneficiary to his mistress.
Oof. Ooh. Also came the next day.
Oh. Hey, Bo.
Wow, that is rough as can be. Mash says, Mash in the comments says, people don't understand life insurance, disability insurance, etc. I only started understanding it once I started working in insurance, and Mash is right regarding life insurance for your bond. Okay, fair
yes.
enough.
I got you. Who's going to pay that if you die? Who's going to be left with that? Your partner.
Ricky
so it is
says,
quite unfortunate.
Ricky says, you are a telemarketer's dream. Gray says, be grateful with disability insurance. Be careful with disability insurance. My father had dementia late in his life, and because we couldn't say the day he got sick, we battled to get them to pay out. Get funeral cover, not life insurance, says Carl. There's all this financial advice. And Congo Chris says, Gareth, please bequeath me that loud shirt in your will. It's all yours, dude. I'll leave it to you. Yeah. Okay. Quickly, before we get to Jean-Jacques Cornish, Malusi says, the messed up part is that it becomes expensive as you get older. Sooner you start the best premiums is a scam, according to Malusi.
Hmm.
That. All right. Let's take our leave from this conversation quickly. Turn our attention to Jean-Jacques Cornish for African analysis. It's brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, looking at what's happening around the African continent. And our talking points this morning begin in just a second, but here he is. JJ Cornish, how are you, sir?
Bonjour to you. I'm very, very well, thanks. Kind of you to ask, though.
So, JJ, it looks kind of dark in there. It's very sinister, your lighting. I like it. You look like you're getting ready to play the villain in a movie.
I certainly should be. Do I look like Boris Karloff? Yeah. I'm in a hotel room, so I don't know my way around as well as I should.
Where in Africa are you?
In Africa. Let me try that.
There we go. That's better. That's better.
Okay.
Where are you at the moment?
I'm in Cape Town.
Okay, very good. All right, so JJ, let's get straight into it. There's lots to talk about today. Peter Obi. Who is Peter Obi? He is the legal challenger for Nigeria's election. And he says that the winner, a guy called Bola Tinubu, was not eligible to run. He questions the process of the outcome. So who is this Peter Obi and what's the story here?
Well, you know, the Nigerian elections are generally two horse races. And this should have been Bola Tinubu from the ruling party and Atiku Abubakar, who is a six-time loser. Peter Obi came in and as the third man and won a remarkable number of votes. In fact, he won the majority of votes in the economic capital, Lagos. Now, he is disputing this on legal grounds, the election result. And this was a controversial election, as Nigerian elections tend to be. Nigeria is one of the few African countries, I can think of Zambia, I can think of Ghana, where they've actually had changes of government. It had military rule until 1999. Sani Abacha died. We had Olusegun Obasanjo coming in, who's an African statesman of note. He's all over the continent. Followed by Umaru Yar'Adua, when he died, Goodluck Jonathan came in, and when he fell, the parties changed, and Muhammadu Buhari, who came in 2015, and he's been there until now, when Bola Tinubu came in. Now, observers said that the elections were free and fair, or some did, but others, for example, the European Union, the American observers from various foundations, and they all said that the elections had betrayed the people, effectively, not being a fair reflection of the people's will. And it seems that Atiku Abubakar, the person who came second from the PDP, Progressive Democratic Party, he is also going to dispute this. So that leaves Nigeria in a bit of a state of flux, you know, with everybody disputing the elections in what is we call Africa's most economically powerful country. There's an argument about that, whether it is South Africa or Nigeria, but it's a country with grown-up problems of its own, doesn't need to have this. And certainly the continent itself doesn't need to have this kind of battling for legitimacy.
So, JJ, I mean, the guy who we're talking about here, Peter Obi, he's the guy who came third.
He came third. Yes, indeed he did. But he did have the backing of Obasanjo, the former president. It was a surprise that he came, that he did so well. I think there was something like 8 candidates at the end, or 18 candidates at the end, and only these three got anything like the number of votes that could bring them to power.
You've been an election observer in a number of countries, and you've seen these countries up, you know, close and personal. Do you think that the European Union election observers have a point here, that this might be a rigged election? You think that Peter Obi has a point here? Is this something that we need to be worried about here?
Well, certainly it seems that the Electoral Commission, independent Electoral Commission, could have done their job better. And that is certainly the point being made by the American bodies that were sent there as observers. You know, it's interesting the fact observers go in something like 2 weeks before. They are long term in a team of observers. There are those who are there for a period to see that the run up to the election was fair, that the access the parties got to the media was fair. And then they go for a period thereafter to see that the handover is fair and free. And that phrase, free and fair, by the way, is very seldom used by the observers themselves. It's a media phrase, you know, that they have been declared free and fair by XXX. But generally the observers, and that was what I was with the teams, you go for about 2 weeks before you get briefed up the wazoo. I mean, it's a fantastic thing to do because you cannot believe the access you get to party leaders, analysts, all sorts of people that you as a single journalist would really struggle to get. And they look around, but the observers have been wrong in many cases because you know, if you go in for 2 weeks before, you observe on the voting day, and then there's a sort of rush to get your report out, you know, sort of like a rush between journalists to get their story out. And sometimes that is a little precipitate to get the report out first. Well, it's an interim report. There's a full report that comes out a couple of months later. So, yes, it's possible that there were some mistakes made. But I think with the plethora of doubt from the European Union and American observers, and British observers too, for that matter, I think there's some case to be made for looking at it again.
So, JJ, what's happening in Senegal? Because the current president is trying to run for a third term, and there's a two-term constitutional limit, kind of like South Africa. Is this just, again, one of these stories of someone overstaying their welcome in Africa?
Yes, indeed it is. It is. Macky Sall has actually said now on French television, Senegal really is a creature of the French government in Africa, really obeys down the line, takes down the line the French approach to things. And he's told TV5, France Television 5, that there'd be nothing wrong with standing again. But there is this constitutional two-term thing. And, you know, it would be very, very disappointing because when you read about that, and I had a look again to see, for example, which countries in Africa had had an actual change of government. It's all very well to have your election every 5 years and then re-elect the president or his or her successor when it comes up. But if you have an actual change of government and that is accepted, that's true democracy in my view. And Senegal is seen as a real democracy, as a bastion, along with countries like Botswana and even our own country, South Africa. But in this case, his remarks are troubling. But his behavior is even worse because the opposition leader, his name is Ousmane Sonko, he has been charged with defamation of the information minister. Now, these defamation charges have been brought against him, and he's supposed to come to court, but his his supporters are saying, no, this man's not going to court. Basically, he's maintaining that they're trying to get a conviction against him to prevent him from being able to run. That would exclude him from being able to run. And so, in other words, disqualify him as a candidate. And he has then, there have been massive protests and stone throwing and police attacked and so on, which is unlike what has happened before in Senegal. So, again, a disturbing trend in a supposed democracy. But from his hospital bed, Ousmane Sonko has accused the government of a strategy of terror and of brutal attacks. He's saying that he was sprayed with this toxic substance. He sent his clothing off overseas to be properly checked and analyzed. But Macky Sall hasn't responded to these claims of violence against him. But again, a disturbing trend. So I've had two disturbing electoral trends in Africa to report to you today.
It's like he's been poisoned. This is unbelievable. And he's gone to hospital. He got so sick. It's unbelievable. Yes. This is wild. Okay, so Senegal continues.
It improves your credibility to, if you're going to claim assault charges, to do it from your hospital bed, huh?
Jesus, unbelievable. All right, so let's look at one other thing quickly before we move on. Kenya has received a donation of 140,000 tons of wheat from the Ukraine. And you would think that Ukraine at the moment has bigger priorities and maybe they need the wheat for themselves. Who knows? But Russia has got involved in this and said, no, 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 Kenya, we will give you even more if you don't side with Ukraine. What's actually going on here, JJ?
Well, you know, when you see, why is everybody going after Africa to get their support? 55 of the 196 countries in the United, 193 countries in the United Nations. So that's a quarter of the UN. So if you get African support for votes in the General Assembly, votes around the place, votes for particular offices that come up, then, you know, you're well on your way with a quarter of the votes. So the Ukrainian donation is an interesting one. They're playing for friends as to the greatest extent possible. The Kenyan Deputy President, Rigathi Gachagua, he went and got the, he's received this and will give it to the neediest people, I suppose, in Kenya and in neighboring countries. But in that big, big summit between Xi Jinping and Vladimir Putin yesterday, Putin spoke out and said that Africa was a Russian priority. Now, you know that grain has been allowed to be shipped out of the Ukraine to African countries. That there's been the permission and then an extension. And what Putin said, Putin, the man who's now wanted by the International Criminal Court for war crimes, by the way, he said, look, if we don't extend this special compensation or special permission for the allowing grain, we will, as Russia, donate that amount of grain that's already been sent to the neediest Africans. So that could be seen as a bit vague. And if you understand Putin, I think it is a bit vague. But nevertheless, both Ukraine and Russia playing for African support in this regard. You know, I wouldn't say for a moment that the humanitarian aspect, the fact that Ukraine has, the invasion of Ukraine has driven up prices, stopped a lot of the grain getting to the people who need it most. That's not foremost in their minds. I think it's to try and get those 55 African countries to support them. And that hasn't been the case. You know, the United Nations General Assembly resolutions, our own South Africa, but abstaining in a case like that rather than vote for anything condemning that Russian invasion.
Yeah, these two powers are definitely vying for support from Africa, but it looks at this point like Russia is getting the lion's share of that support. China and Russia are definitely trying to ally themselves with as many African countries as they can. Where does this leave our foreign department, our international relations department, JJ, you've been paying attention to this for some time. Naledi Pandor, our minister, got into trouble a while ago for saying that Ukraine deserves our support and Russia's the aggressor, and she was hauled over the coals by the president. I mean, what do you think is really going on in our administration at the moment when it comes to foreign affairs?
Well, you know, we hold moral high ground in terms of, still to a very large extent, we hold the moral high ground because of our change, our transformation from apartheid, relatively peaceful, not entirely peaceful. Well,
we certainly used to. I mean, whether or not we've still got that.
To some extent, we really still do. I'm not saying it's well deserved, but it is a factor. And so to have the powers vying for our support is perfectly understandable, because if South Africa says this or that, people do sit up and listen. Certainly not my clients in Britain and France anymore. They don't even take stories for me about corruption, because they say, well, you phoned us last week with a story of major corruption. When are you going to change the story? It's very, very frustrating covering the country. But diplomacy is an interesting game in that you don't have friends, you have interests. So where should South Africa be? Well, South Africa should look very carefully to where its interests lie. Are they with the European Union, with the United States? Are they with China? Are they with Russia? China is the biggest trading partner now, and China lends money to Africa without any concern for the human rights record of the country that it's lending to, without any concern for the internal politics of that country. So it's unconditional loans they are making, but they are loans that have to be paid back. And that is why America has had its foreign secretary, in other words, Secretary of State, the deputy president of the United States, she's coming up towards the end of this month on a three-nation safari. The wife, the first lady, we've had the president saying he's coming to, he had a summit of African leaders last December, and he's coming to Africa in the next few months. So the United States is seeking very muscularly to, in a sense, counter the Chinese and Russian influence in Africa. And they've been offering aid. I mean, they've offered aid all over the place, and actual aid, not loans. Mm-hmm. So, you know, to be the recipient of this kind of attention can be very, very beneficial if you play your cards right.
Yes.
All right, JJ. Well, thank you. I mean, normally we would do this on a Tuesday, but with yesterday being a public holiday, we decided to move African Analysis to a Wednesday. And thank you for joining us from your hotel room in Cape Town. And I hope we'll catch up very, very soon. Get some more stories from the continent. Here's JJ Cornish. Thank you so much.
Cheers to Mesh as well. And I hope you're all properly insured, guys.
We definitely are now.
Mash seems to be a little bit obsessed with this at the moment. I'm worried that someone's going to take out life insurance on him and then kill him, and that'll be the end of it. Score a huge amount of money. Thanks, JJ. We'll catch up with you soon. There we go. JJ Cornish, African Analysis, which is brought to you by the Johannesburg Business School, who are doing amazing things on the continent. Just the other day, we got to speak to one of the visiting professors from Oxford, who came in to see us, and you can find that interview on cliffcentral.com. Also, speaking of interviews, in the next couple of minutes, we will get to grips with someone called Yusuf Haddad. He is an Israeli Arab who has an amazing story to tell, and we'll talk to him in just a short while. You are going to hear that first right here on the show. Don't go anywhere. Cliffcentral.com. It is Wednesday the 22nd at 7 o'clock. Stick around. There's more to come. Don't go away. Cliffcentral.com.